Chapter 21 Frogs. I stood in front of the mirror on our bedroom wall and rolled my hair in Mama's tin curlers as my sisters and I practiced singing Brighten the Corner Where You Are in three-part harmony, with Irma taking the lead. We hadn't sung together much since last Thanksgiving. Of course, we hadn't sung together much since Mama died. But if there was one thing we Weber sisters could do together and do well, it was singing, which made me wonder why we didn't do more of it. The church congregation always seemed to enjoy our performances. We sang for them quite a few times before Mama died, but the only time we sang for them now was during our Thanksgiving show. Mama helped to launch the first show 4 years earlier, and everyone liked the program so much it became an annual event. We ended our practice song on an especially loud note, and Daddy applauded us through his bedroom wall and followed his whistles of approval with a shout of,
"Now go to bed."
Irma and Sarah jumped onto either side of the bed.
"You look silly,"
Irma said, watching me crawl from the foot of our bed to the pillows, metal cylinders crowning my noggin.
"Completely silly," added Sarah.
I shimmied down under the blanket between them and dusted off my small pillow. "Both of you are gonna have to use curlers someday, too, you know. Your hair is starting to get long, too."
"Maybe I'll not let it get any longer than this. This is long enough,"
Irma said, rising up from our bed enough to peer over into our small mirror. Sarah ran her fingertips across the ends of her hair.
"Yeah, this is long enough for me, too."
"Of course it is," I said, addressing the little mockingbird. Sarah cut me a curt look and flopped herself onto her left side, presenting a cold shoulder and bumping her bottom against my leg. Irma, likewise, slid under the covers and put her back to me. I stared at the ceiling and took note of the peppery smell of the dust. Last week it smelled greasy and nauseating. This week, I believed I could cook with it. Each dust storm left behind a distinct flavor, and I began to wonder what smells I would wake to tomorrow. After a fitful night of sleep, or lack thereof, I inched my way out of the bed before the sun rose. My better side, that side of me that had a lick of sense, kept saying I was crazy to try to capture and skin a bunch of frogs to sell for tap shoe money. My better side kept reminding me that this scheme had been cooked up by none other than the aggravating Buddy Carroll, who should never be trusted. And yet, Buddy's idea seemed workable. And my flawed side, my very flawed side, was still determined to buy a pair of tap shoes. I tiptoed down the hall and out the back door, grabbing a bucket and block of wood I left outside the night before. Free from the house, but shivering in the cold, I ran with all my might toward the creek, my bare feet pounding across the dried earth. A few remaining pains from my ankle wound shot upwards through my leg, but I didn't let that slow me down. Tying my gown in a knot around my thighs, the frog hunt began. One by one, the frogs tumbled into my bucket, the heavy block of wood sliding back and forth just enough to allow the next frog to enter the darkened chamber. 10 frogs later, I hauled the bucket to our back porch and pulled a hidden butcher's knife out from under the bottom step. The first breaks of dawn shone across the horizon, and I smiled at my perfect timing. Pulling one of the fatter frogs from the bucket, I laid it flat and tried to remember what Buddy had told me about this task. Why had I interrupted him? I picked up the frog and inspected it, turning it over and over, chasing it through my fingers and gripping it hard to keep it from escaping. Then, on one turn, an unexpected thing happened. My eyes met with the frog's eyes. The frog's round eyes blinked at me.
"Don't look at me," I said.
But the frog disobeyed, and its eyes remained locked on mine, blinking, staring, looking more and more like a plea for mercy than I could bear.
"How do you expect me to kill you if you keep looking at me?" I whispered.
"Shoes," I reminded myself. "Shoes. It's just a frog."
I knew the head had to come off. It had to come off if I was going to get tap shoes. There was no other way. I laid the frog flat on its back. Its legs flailed about in all directions as I lowered the knife toward its neck? Where was its neck? I had no idea. The knife began to wiggle within my grip. My shaking spread from my fingers and hands to my arms and head. Within seconds, my body vibrated with reluctance. How could I kill something that could look at me, blink at me? Shoes! Remember the shoes! I had to do it. I needed those shoes. I couldn't do it. I needed to set the frogs free. And, as most humans do, I found the answer in the form of a compromise. Surely Mr. Sidwell wouldn't mind butchering the frogs. I might not make as much money, but I could probably still make some. And I could do it right after the church breakfast if I acted quickly enough and caught Mr. Sidwell before he left the service. I slipped the frog back into my bucket with its friends, tied a rope around the block of wood to keep it in place, and toted my loot around to the front of the house. I quietly climbed into the bed of our pickup and secured the bucket inside the opening of a cracked spare tire that Daddy hauled around everywhere he went. Back inside the house, the family was rolling out of bed. I quickly announced that I had just made a trip to the privy, and I went right to work unrolling each curler to reveal loosely hanging blonde locks that sprung in all directions as I bounced in front of our mirror. My favorite mother-made dress still fit me just fine, but surprised me with a bit of discomfort as I leaned down to reach for my tattered shoes. A few remnants of paste remained on the back side of the left heel. I scraped them off with my fingernail and wondered how I hadn't noticed them before now. Hearing the pickup starting, I raced out the front door and climbed into the cab between Sarah and Daddy. The four of us rolled out across our property to the street, creating clouds of dust as if the countryside needed more. Arriving at the church, I saw the Sidwells making their way across the parking lot. I followed everyone inside and then slipped back out to the pickup to retrieve the frogs. Being small had its advantages. Being a regular at the church had its advantages, too. All the regulars knew the back door didn't lock, and it allowed me to slip back inside the meeting hall unnoticed and place the bucket behind the serving table that was covered with pitchers of milk and piping hot pots of coffee. As the congregation gathered their breakfast and seated themselves, we Weber sisters took our places on the small wooden stage. Brother Richmond presented a blessing, and when my eyes opened after the prayer, I saw in the crowd Miss Francesca Young. Miss Young, the lady of all ladies, was present and about to watch me sing.
"Girls, are you ready?"
Brother Richmond said. We nodded, and Irma counted softly. 3, 2, 1. And we began to sing. I remembered the times my vocal cords had frozen in fear. But while standing between my sisters, fear was no match for comfort. I was right where I belonged. Our harmony carried through the church hall. The audience set down their forks and clapped along with the beat of the song. Even Miss Young clapped, her left hand resting on her crossed leg, her right hand softly keeping time. Everyone was caught up in the song. Everyone except Buddy, who had begun to choke on an enormous bite of pancakes and had scurried over to the serving table for a second glass of milk. I watched his movements out of the corner of my eye, watched him pour a glass of milk, watched him gulp it down and pour another helping, and watched him look around the table for a place to park near the milk in case he needed more. Spying the hidden frog bucket, he pulled it forward and sat down on the board covering it. Then Buddy attempted to join in the crowd's clapping by pounding his heels against the floor, rocking the bucket beneath him until the rocking turned to rolling, and the rolling turned to tipping, and the tipping turned to uncapping, and the uncapping turned to mayhem as frogs of all sizes made their great escape throughout the church hall. Buddy's rump hit the floor. His milk went flying through the air, splattering various occupants in the first two rows of tables. One of the larger frogs leapt up onto the drink table and knocked over a milk pitcher. His less fortunate companion bounded directly into a pot of scalding hot coffee and scrambled helplessly to get out. Six frogs hopped and scurried frantically through the diners as row after row of people sprung to their feet in response. Two frogs headed straight toward me, as if on a mission to seek revenge. Irma and Sarah scrambled around and grabbed the two charging frogs. Women's shrieks and men's shouting replaced the beauty of our harmonizing. Miss Young leapt to her feet and gracefully trotted toward the back of the room. Chester brought the empty bucket to Irma to help her corral the frogs.
"Hey, that's our bucket," Irma said.
Daddy appeared on the scene at that very moment and took in the sight of the bucket, the confused Irma, the giggling Sarah, and, well, me.
"What's going on?"
he asked. A thought rushed through my mind. Daddy would never suspect me of having anything to do with frogs. But that thought was slaughtered by the very boy who attempted to teach me how to slaughter these frogs, for he knew exactly who had gathered the frogs and why.
"Naomi, you'd better hurry. Your tap shoe money is hopping out the back door."
Buddy let out a satisfied laugh that was cut short by Chester's grip on his single intact overall strap. As Chester dragged Buddy back to their family's table, Daddy glared at me.
"Tap shoes? Again?"
"Daddy, I
realized there were no words to justify my actions. And there was no avoiding punishment this time. As Mrs. Sidwell jumped from her chair, launching a frog from her lap, and Mr. Mathis growled in disgust at the frog perched atop his shoe, I knew I had brought upon myself a spanking, a lecture, and at least a dozen written apologies. And to make matters worse, I had horrified Miss Francesca Young. Memory joggers. What can you remember about a silly but embarrassing incident from your youth? When did you ever feel that you let down your parents or others who were important to you? Did you attend church as a child? If so, what do you remember about going to church?